Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo Meditation, and much, much more, hosted by Duchess.
Hey, chickadees. Hosted by Duchess. How y'all doing today? Boy, oh boy, has it been a phenomenal month. We haven't been together since last month. I've been just hanging in there, doing my thing, here and there, all over the place. And I am what you would call, overwhelmed, overstressed, overworked, and basically feeling pretty wiped out. Boy, if you knew some of the things that have been going on with me for the last past 3 weeks. It started out with a phenomenal trip to Pasadena, to California. I had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time. Spent 4 glorious days up in the mountains with sisters. Just nothing but beautiful black women. People, women of color, all women. And I had a grand time feeling the awesomeness of being in all of that energy, because you know where I live, there are a very limited amount of people of color, much less all of them females who are people of color. And I had a grand time. I learned a lot, got a lot out of it, and it's amazing some of the things that went on. They had a ceremony, an opening ceremony, and they gave pendants to the elders. Anyone 60 and older got a pendant, and I got a pendant because I'm an elder, and my pendant is a stone, unakite. Now, when I started reading about the stone unakite, I know why this stone came to me, why this stone presented itself to me, because the energy of this stone is something that I've probably been needing for a long, long time. And so this stone came to me as a gift. And of course we know that when stones or certain things come to you, you know that it's meant for you basically by what the energy it holds. Now this unakite is a sort of a jasper, and it brings together the abundant nurturing energy of the green. It's green, and it has a soft, passionate pink in it. And it brings me a grounding, so to speak. It grounds you. So I really needed this grounding. So this ultimate stone for living. Pardon me for being all tongue-tied and twisted here. It's just that I've been flustered lately with all that's going on in my space. One of the deeper things of this stone is that unakite vibes help to loosen the vice grip that rules over society and that society has over the person. It keeps you in a spiritual sort of mold where has this valiant warrior type energy towards yourself. And I need some of that. I've been needing some of that for a while. I've been feeling lackadaisical since I had the surgery on my shoulder. I've been feeling sort of ungrounded, dragging. This unakite stone has the nickname of living in the now. And I tend to dwell in the past or get depressed about past things or look forward and get anxious about things that are not even here yet. So the magic of unakite lies in its ability to inspire a sense of urgency as you realize how quickly time slips through your fingers. With the unakite stone meaning, and it tells you all your dreams. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those stones where you can meditate, and while you're meditating, tell the stone the dreams that you can't tell anyone else because it's here for me. And I tend to be one of those secretive types of people. I don't want to tell everybody all my business. I don't want to share all my aches and pains with the world. And so it's nice that this song decided to find its way to me. And so when I got home, I found a silver chain, and I've been wearing my pendant after I did my little blessing over it and let it sit on the altar with the ancestors' energy, and I did my cleansing because, you know, we learned in the past that when you have stones or crystals that you find in the store or that are given to you, what you have to do is you need to cleanse them. Cleanse them either by putting it in your own juju water or cleansing them by letting them run under cold water in the sink, or letting them sit on your altars after you've cleansed them and allow it to build up its own energy and clearing for you because it's a personal gift. And when you go to the stores and you find stones and crystals, you have to understand that so many people have gone past these stones and touched them and handled them. You don't know what type of energy the stone has picked up along its way. So you clean these stones and allow them to find their energy to give you the gift that they came to you to give you. So what's been going on? I know I wasn't around to give you all the first readings of Lena Stevens's Power Path. And I'm going to give you a little excerpt on that, a little bit of that, Lena Stevens, before we go into our topic. And our topic is practicing spiritual principles in all of our affairs. With Lena Stevens, she talked about this month being a month of restructuring. Now, I also have to apologize if my microphone isn't coming through clear for some of y'all. I'm on a different mic tonight than I usually am, and I don't know how it's going to pick up the sound and my voice. But we're going to do what we can with what we got. So with Lena Stevens, her September forecast was restructuring and recalibration. And she expressed the fact that we are busy pulling out the past pieces of old wounds and patterns. We're in the middle of pulling out the last threads that are keeping things put together in an old and outdated way. We are leaving the old comfort level of known territory and moving into the unknown. We know this is what we need to do despite the discomfort it is causing in the mind and physical body. This final dissolving is leaving us fragmented and somewhat ungrounded, perhaps anxious and fearful, and certainly a bit chaotic in our thoughts and focus. This may even feel like there is something wrong with us and that we are not functioning like we used to. So Lena wants to welcome you to September. Now, the good news is that there is tremendous support for restructuring and recalibrating your life in all areas because her energy is entitled Restructure and Recalibrate. The bad news is that you will go through growing pains to get there. It will take courage, so much courage. Be uncomfortable in your identity, and you will have doubts along the way. There is, however, an underlying excitement. How about a little bit of inspiration and enthusiasm that this is the right path, and there is some comfort in knowing that there really is no option at this point but to move forward. Just keep trotting along. The other word that she is using is remodeling. Remodeling takes place when you wish to improve something. The process creates upheaval and chaos until it is complete. During the remodeling, you need to be flexible and resourceful to survive. You know, we've got to take it slow, steady as she goes. And we've got to be patient. But when it is complete, you will have a new form, a new structure, and a new space. So you know how this remodeling can go. Some of us have tried doing it in many aspects of our lives, and it's chaotic at first. But once it all settles down, we're really happy that we did what we set out to do. Now, one of the themes continues to be letting go and clearing out and cutting loose of what no longer serves us. Wow, have I been going through that? Let me tell you about my computer and how I downloaded some stuff on my computer. I call myself downloading an Adobe Flash. Video, something, because I wasn't getting the video on Facebook. And as a result of that, downloading that, I corrupted my computer with a lot of spyware in the background. So thank goodness I have this computer genius in Pasadena, California, called my middle son, who let me know what I had done. And, of course, he admonished me for downloading something without getting his permission. Sometimes we just think, we can do things on our own. We don't always have to go and get permission from somebody who may know better. Let me show you how I've grown up, how I've matured. But it just so happens that in me showing you how I've grown up and how I've matured as a computer experienced person, I just screwed up my whole computer. And what did he have to do? He had to erase. I had to erase everything on my computer to erase the damage that I had caused. Now, you know, that sounds horrible when you have to erase something, the whole entire drive of your computer. And I want you to know it is horrible. But back to Lena and her restructuring and recalibrating. As a result of me doing that, I was blessed to have connected and purchased an archiving system and put it on my computer before I left for California. Now, this was 3 weeks ago. And it just so happened that everything that I had to erase was stored on a cloud somewhere up in Never Neverland computer world, stored somewhere because it was saved up there. And so as a result of erasing, I was able to have my son download all of my saved stuff, including my books, my pictures, my documents. It's horrible when you think you're going to lose all of that. So like Lena says, there are many things in life that could use a change. And I found that out once all of my stuff was downloaded or back onto my computer. I had to reattach my printer. I had to reattach all things, everything. So I fell right in line with Lena's forecast for September, restructure and recalibrate. Okay? She says, there are the emotional structures also. Well, I like to freak out, you know, over this. I mean, there's the experiences that we may have in restructuring our experiences of love, support, betrayal, rejection. I had to restructure every single ounce of my life. It took me, I'm still doing it, it took me 3 days, 3 days. But the worst of it was when my son said, now you have to change your password. You have to change your passwords. Do you know how many websites and how many passwords and usernames I have on these websites to have to change my banking passwords, to change my email passwords, how about to change my DMV password, to change all my medical records passwords, the Social Security password with the United States Department of Social Security, to change my passwords on my job website because I have an employee website where I go to. I've been sitting here changing websites for the last past 3 days. But Lena goes on to say that it does get better. So while I'm talking to you about my personal stuff, let's talk to you about your personal stuff. The best way to use this month is to stay out of judgment and take all experiences as ones that are leading you forward. It is a good month for taking a risk on a choice you have been contemplating, whether it is a move or a radical challenge or change in career or say saying yes to a relationship or saying no to something you have felt endlessly obligated to put up with. It is also a good time to embark on a new schedule, a new direction, a new project, and a new commitment for self-care. These are choices and intentions, when committed to 100%, will lead to the restructuring and recalibration in energy necessary to implement them. Now, this bodily restructuring and doing a self-care thing, most of you know I've been out of work since April because of my shoulder, and I have to go back to work in October. Now, a part of me is not looking forward to that because my job is a very arduous, heavy-duty, laborious type of lifting and pushing and shoving boxes. And I'm pretty sure my body is going to start screaming once I start touching those boxes again. But to follow Lena's advice, I've already put in place a membership at the recreation department to do some water aerobics 3 times a week, 1.5 hours each day. And I figured that's my best way to get my body and build up my stamina before I go back to stand on that concrete floor and start pushing boxes around because, you know, I do not want to kill myself when I return to work. So I like the fact that when we read some of Lena's advice, we find that we are rolling and we are moving right there in line with the energy that she's speaking about, you know? She moves into our relationships. Your relationships need to be supportive this month. If they are not, cut them loose. Some of the important ones will benefit from a restructuring and recalibration process. It is easy for relationships to fall into a rut where they feel stale and full of unproductive patterns. Pay attention and evaluate relationship dynamics with neutrality instead of blame, so you can then create some intentions and make a plan for resetting them in a new way to serve you better. This may require some hard truth. Well, it could also require some discussion, but it will be worthwhile if you think about it. This includes your relationships with yourself and what you let yourself get away with that does not serve you. How many of us do those things to ourselves? You know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But no one will know that we did this. Yes, someone will, and that someone will be you. You know you've done that, and you are the most important energy on the face of this earth to know when you're doing something that you should not be doing to yourself or for yourself. Lena goes on to talk about health in the physical body. This is a hard month on the body. The challenges started with the eclipse energy of the last month, and it will continue until the body is able to assimilate and recalibrate to the new vibration and frequencies being generated by the sun and activated by the earth. It is important to stay out of martyrdom around physical issues and instead look at all challenges as a means towards personal growth with the intention to end up better than you were. This is a month where you will need lots of support, and it does not serve to be secretive or isolated around your personal process or physical challenges. Ask for support when you need it and call in additional help from others, including your allies. The belief system that you have a place around what is possible for healing, well-being, and vital health are the structures that are most challenged and subject to restructuring and recalibration. Any physical challenge you may experience can be interpreted as a sign that something needs to change. We often say that the physical body is the last to know, and can lag behind what has already changed on the energetic, emotional, and mental levels. So be patient. Be patient with it and give it lots of love, compassion, and nurturing. You know, I was talking to myself the other morning, and it's really strange. Someone asked me, how was my healing with the shoulder? And I had to tell her, my shoulder hurts like hell. It's a healing type of pain. It's like it's stiff, and it hurts to move it. But I've got to work it because I have to unkink the stiff. This is not the damaged type of pain when it was in pain. I couldn't sleep at night because it was throbbing and pulsating. This is the healing kind of pain, whereas for a whole week in Pasadena, California, not once did I use one physical therapy exercise that I usually do when I'm at home. So it just kind of kinks up and gets stiff. But all in all, we're going to be fine. Things are going just exactly the way they're supposed to. And if we pray and do our meditation, we're going to get through the challenges and the struggles that seem to be wanting to weigh us down, because they're an illusion. They're an illusion, and this too shall pass. So let's talk about this topic. You know, while I was in California, I went to one of the best AA meetings I have gone to in years. I mean, it was a room full of young women. I guess I may have been the oldest one in the room, and everybody else in there was like under 40, and there must have been about 50, maybe more. It was being held at a facility, a rehab facility, and half of the women there were participants in the facility or residents in rehab, and the other half, as great as it seemed, they were just walk-ins from, like me, going to an AA meeting off the street. But it was all women, and I learned some things when I went to that meeting. A lot of people don't realize that with AA meetings, Let's see. There are many programs of recovery. This is under our topic description. I'm going to read this to you. Practicing spiritual principles in all our affairs. There are many programs of recovery. Most use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps. They are fondly referred to as 12-step programs. Now, Bill W., AA's founder, considered each step to be a spiritual principle in and of itself. However, particularly in the 12 and 12, that's the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, he outlined the spiritual principles behind each step. Some of them seem like common sense, but understanding them, hearing them, and reading these principles and actually practicing them in our daily, day-to-day lives are two entirely different things. Okay, and that's where we are going to look at the 12 steps of these recovery programs, because people don't realize when an individual has the disease of addiction and they go into a program, whether it's the disease of addictive eating, drinking, drugging, gambling, sex, there are so many different addictions out there. And addiction is but a symptom of the real problem. So in order to get down to the roots of the real problem, you go into a 12-step program and you work 12 steps of spiritual recovery, because your recovery is nothing. I don't care if you stop taking drugs, if you haven't had a program of recovery, or you stop drinking, you haven't gone into a program of recovery where you have followed the spiritual principles and design for your maintenance in everyday life, then you're just considered dry. You're just considered dry. So let's look at these 12 steps. okay? The first step in the 12-step program is we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, in practicing this step, it can be we admitted we were powerless over food and our lives had become unmanageable. That's for Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We have admitted we were powerless over drugs or pills, or we have admitted we were powerless over technology, and now we are addicted to our telephones and our texting. We can't put the phone down. It's got to go with us to the bathroom. It's got to go with us when we in the grocery store. It's got to go with us, you know, when everywhere. You know, when we're in church, we got the phone. We're, no matter where we are, we got to have that phone, and we got to have it on. It's got to be pushing them messages out to us. So this is any addiction that you have, okay? Once we admit we are powerless over the addiction and that our lives have become unmanageable, which is the first step, this is the step of honesty. This is the step of fairness and straightforwardness of conduct. This is the step that is adherent to the facts. Now, when we first read this step, we might lead to the conclusion that the first principle, being honesty, it should be acceptance. However, this doesn't quite fit the model of recovery as we know it. Early recovery often resembles a period of grief. No matter how much we regret the life we knew, we still mourn its passing as we enter our new chapter. We cannot therefore expect those in early recovery to leap straight toward the fifth and final stage of the grieving process. Now, those of you who know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the five stages of death and dying, she talks about defining those five stages. Now, I remember when I first stopped drinking 22 years ago and I first entered into AA program, I was like, you know, I was angry. You know, that may be your first denial. First is denial. I denied the fact that I had problems. Then I got pissed off because I realized that I may very well have a problem. Then I'm going to go to AAA meetings, and then finally I would just get up and be angry about the fact that I had to be there. And I would stomp out of the room, and these people just pat me on my back and say, oh, you sounded wonderful tonight. Keep coming back. Okay? Until I finally admitted and became honest with myself, you know, I got a problem. And in order for me to resolve this problem, I got to first admit that I got one. Okay? So this honesty in the death and dying says, what it says of acceptance is, if a patient has had enough time, he will reach a stage during which he is neither depressed or angry about his fate. He will have been able to express his previous feelings, his envy for the living and the healthy, his anger for those who do not have to face their end so soon. Now, perhaps some will feel this way upon reaching step one, but certainly not everybody. Most of us need to develop our principles before this step of acceptance sets in. At this stage, we simply let go of our denial. And getting honest with ourselves tends to be an emotional process. No, this is not the point after we express our envy for the normal people or anger for our need to get sober. If we haven't faced those feelings yet, this is when we first start to do so. We won't lie. Step one hurts sometimes, not in the way that breaking denial hurts those who must grieve their own death. But much like breaking out of denial leads to feelings such as anger and depression in the Kubler-Ross model, step one sometimes provokes such feelings in the newly recovering addict or alcoholic. Fortunately, the next two principles will grant us some relief. Now, it doesn't just go with this honesty thing. You know, we hear a lot in our 12-step programs that these programs are programs of honesty. And we need honesty in all shapes, forms of fact, including what they call cash register honesty. You know, I mean, we walk in honesty. I'm going to share you some stuff. It's so funny. The first instance was I was up there in Malibu, and lady was selling, and I had gotten the pendant, the beautiful pendant around my neck, and she said she had a necklace, a chakra bracelet that would match my pendant for me to see her. So I went by her vendor table to see the chakra bracelet. Now, she had sold it to somebody who came by before I got there. Well, you know, I told her it wasn't meant for me to have. So I looked at some other chakra bracelets, and I chose one, and she put it in a little bag for me, and I went off to the closing ceremonies, and I'm sitting there, and I happened to open up my purse and was like, oh my goodness, I didn't give her any money for this bracelet. So I immediately got up and went outside to give her the money. I said, I didn't pay you for the bracelet. And she said, I know. I said, so what were you going to do? You were going to come looking for me? She said, no, I gave that to you. Didn't you hear me say I gave it to you? Well, that's one instance of honesty, okay? And that's a pretty kind of sort of big one, you know. Now, 2 days ago, I'm at Giant Supermarket, and I'm buying my groceries, and I spend about $50-some-odd for groceries, and I get to my vehicle, and I'm loading groceries in my car, and, you know, I get ready. The shopping cart is empty. I go to reach for my purse, and there is this bottle of citric magnesium. That's what I needed, you know, to kind of purge my system. And this thing only costs $1.99. Now, you mean to tell me I got to walk all the way back in that store to pay this $1.99? And I gritted my teeth, and I really said out loud, you know? It was hiding behind my purse. So when I moved my purse, there it was, sitting there winking and blinking and smiling at me. And, you know, I was really upset. And I put that thing in my car, and then something went, do you know I had no choice but to walk back in that store and get at me in that bottle. And he looked at me. I said, you know why I'm here? I didn't pay for this. It was hiding behind my purse in the car. I said, so this is both our lucky day. Me, I maintain honesty, and he had a new way of looking at me, all right? Now, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, nobody would know that I put that $1.99 bottle of medication in my car but me. And you know what? Me is the most important essence of knowing that I was dishonest than any other entity on the face of this earth. Because if I'm not honest with that, how can me, the essence of me, trust me? Okay? Trust, my karma is swift. If I had done that, I would have lost something bigger and greater than that. Something bigger and greater than that would have been taken from me. You know, so you can't talk about, you know, somebody or something stealing from you, because you got to think of what have you stolen in your life. What are you stealing in your world? Are you at work and you're stealing time? You know, a couple of pennies, you know what I'm saying? I mean, what is $1.99 after I just spent $50-something in the grocery store? Well, it was a lot for my spiritual honesty. So step two, while we at it, two in the program of recovery, is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, this step, the principle is hope, to expect with desire something on which hopes are centered. To get ourselves out of the funk that sometimes accompanies step one, that grieving thing that, the, you know, we must begin seeking a solution to our problems. This begins in step two, when we develop hope that a solution exists and that we can make use of it. Those already familiar with some of these principles know that step three, the next one, requires faith. Some believe hope and faith to be synonymous. So allow us to differentiate them here. Quite simply, hope is faith with trust. Think of the classic Judy Blume novel in which a young girl named Margaret constantly prays that God will help her reach maturity. She maintains great hope that this will happen, yet becomes increasingly exasperated when it doesn't, despite her hope that she might see her prayers fulfilled. We see her faith wane throughout the narrative. Or a more classic example is Samuel Beck's Waiting for Godot, a play in which two men spend day after day awaiting the arrival of a mysterious man with whom they seem to know quite little. In fact, despite their hope that he will arrive, they don't even know that they are waiting in the right place. They don't know. They continue waiting, but express great doubt and sometimes even consider giving up. In other words, hope expresses promise but still allows for fear of disappointment. Those unfamiliar with the above literary references likely still understand the feeling that they describe. At this stage of a 12-step person's recovery, we hope for the best, but remain uncertain. We are like some of those football players, you know, or football player fans, those fans of those football players, be patiently waiting. Another Super Bowl victory? Sure, it could happen, but will it? And more importantly, when? We begin finding our answer as we continue adding our principles. So that's your second principle, your second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Then we have step three, his faith. I met a nice lady at that workshop named Faith. Faith said she was going to listen to the show today. I hope she's listening. Faith is complete confidence, belief, and trust. Now, the third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. As discussed previously, faith implies trust. Some describe this trust as blind, but it does not originate from nowhere. Instead, it develops from experience. In his short book on faith, Just Trust, author Dave Scheel compares faith to a light switch. As toddlers, we don't necessarily understand how light switches work. Nevertheless, we slowly but surely come to understand that they do. Not only that, but we are so confident in the light switch having the ability to turn on the light that if we flip the switch and the light doesn't turn on, we will actually flip the switch off and on, one or more times, fully expecting the light to turn on. This is a measure of faith. We firmly believe that when the switch is flipped, the light will turn on. We know this because every time we have tested the theory, it has always worked. As we work on developing our principles and experience the joys of sobriety, we gain faith that this life can work for us. We see others work these principles and thrive as a result. eventually coming to believe that we can do the same. Upon reaching this conclusion, we surrender to the power, that awesome power that's greater than ourselves, that higher power of our understanding. This is not a white flag sort of surrender. Aside from trust, another quality marks the difference between hope and faith. This is action, which we begin taking as we incorporate the rest of the principles in our lives. So now we move on to principle 4. And I remember one time when I was talking to a guy in AA 20-some-odd years ago, I said, well, I've reached step 3, and I know the third step prayer, you know, by heart. Now offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I might better do thy will. Please take away my difficulties, that victory over them will be a witness to those that I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May thy will, not mine, be done always. I said, I'm ready to do this fourth step. And he said, well, look at what it says in the book, big book. When you finish saying this third step prayer and you finish with step 3, it says now you launch off into a program of recovery. That means you immediately begin step 4. So you may need a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, this takes courage. Because what you're getting ready to do is you're getting ready to open up some stuff and look at some stuff, your moral stuff. The word fearless in step 4 implies courage, but not how you might think. Many of us do indeed fear the process of taking a long, hard look at our past. But we express all of the first 4 principles in doing so anyway. Our searching inventory necessitates full honesty, and we take this step in the hopes of bettering our recovery. Faith then inspires courage, allowing us to push through the fear that sometimes causes us to procrastinate. In The Gifts of Imperfection, Brené Brown provides an excellent definition of courage that we may apply to step 4. It is one of its earliest forms. The word courage had a very different definition than it does today. Courage originally meant to speak one's mind by telling all of one's heart. Over time, this definition has changed, and today courage is more synonymous with being heroic. Heroics is important, and we certainly need heroes, but I think we've lost touch with the idea that speaking honestly and openly about who we are, about what we're feeling, and about our experiences, good and bad, is the definition of courage. Heroics is often about putting our life on the line. Ordinary courage is about putting our vulnerability on the line. In today's world, that's pretty extraordinary. So, to continue working our recovery and developing our principles, we require the courage to be vulnerable. And it's a good thing we begin building it in step 4, because we're going to need it in the steps to come. Who, buddy? And people thought just walking into an AA program and going to a meeting was an easy thing. No, it's not easy if you're going to work those steps. Step 5, that's your integrity. The quality or state of being complete or undivided, soundness. In step 5, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. The word integrity bears a few meanings. In one sense, it suggests the maintenance of our moral values. It might also mean a state of wholeness, as in the term structural integrity. When applied to electronic data, it means consistency and a general lack of corruption. For the purpose of analyzing 12-step principles, we may apply all these definitions. When we show the courage and integrity necessary to own up to our own past wrongs, even before an audience of a single person, we demonstrate our morality. Step five obviously does not take the form of bragging, but rather a confession of the wrongs that we wish to make right. This strengthens our relationship with our sponsor and also helps them to assist us in outlining a plan for redemption. In this sense, step five lends an air of structural integrity to our recovery. Our plans to overcome our past become more whole. And as long as we leave nothing out and read everything on our step four list, step five demonstrates integrity through consistency of our timeline. Only by skirting the truth and lying during step five may our recovery efforts become corrupted. At this point, the principles become quite intertwined. For as you'll see, the next two principles play quite a role in step five as well, just as integrity plays a role in the next few steps. Cool. Thanks. Okay. Let's talk about step six, willingness. Willingness, prompt to act or respond, accepted and done of choice or without reluctance. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, that's step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, step six sounds like a tall order. Fortunately, it doesn't actually ask that we remove all shortcomings. It simply asks that we become ready and willing to try. More than that, it asks that we become willing to admit we cannot do it on our own. Our higher power, be it God or simply a supportive fellowship, will help us do that. But no one can help us unless we open ourselves up to it. Not only does this require the principle of willingness, but it also tests the degree to which we have undertaken the principles of the previous steps. Okay? As noted in Drop the Rock, that was a good book, a popular guide to working step six and step seven. It is a matter of practice and willingness of using the steps we've already taken to maintain our commitment. The more willing we become, the more we practice acting as if, the more active our surrender becomes, and the more we are able to live as if. It is a fulfilling and rewarding process. Acting as if can raise questions of genuineness and authenticity. Is there a conflict with the person I am choosing to become and the person I currently am? The answer to this question almost invariably proves to lie in the affirmative to varying degrees. As we continue developing our principles, we seek to minimize this sense of conflict and step more fully into the lives we'd like to see for ourselves. This feels quite empowering. At the same time, it necessitates a great deal of humility. And step seven is that humility. Step seven, we humbly ask our Creator to remove our shortcomings. We often, now, you know, step seven, that's humility. You know, we're not proud or haughty, not arrogant or assertive, a clear and conscious understanding of what we are, followed by a sincere desire to become what we can be. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. We often confuse humility with humiliation, but this definition doesn't work. If humiliation were all it took to get sober, most of us would have succeeded after our first blackout. Humility does not require us to lack self-esteem. In fact, the most humble among us generally recognize our strengths in addition to our weaknesses. The difference is that the meek will see their without overinflating their self-importance. Returning to that book, Drop the Rock, we took a look at those who properly exhibited this principle. They, quote, they have gotten down on their own right size. Humility is understanding that they're worthwhile. It's the middle ground between the extremes of generosity and intense shame. They have a sincere desire to be and become the best they can be. Today, we remember that humility is not being meek. It is being our true selves. Humility for us means staying our right size and remembering we are as humble as we are grateful. In other words, we recognize our strengths with gratitude rather than ego. To an extent, we may even practice gratitude in the face of our shortcomings. The principles teach us to use our weaknesses as learning opportunities. Our lives and addiction took us down a terrible road, but that same road led to a greater life that lies ahead of us. Realizing this, we continue our journey through the principles that we may bring our dark past into harmony with our bright future. And that was step 7. Step 8. Love. Made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Now, that's that show of love. So that's that principle of love in step 8. Okay? Unselfish concern that fully accepts another in loyalty and seeks his good to hold dear. A mention from the heart. Some lists apply different principles to a few of the steps. This includes step 8. Okay? Although brotherly love tends to appear on most versions, the willingness to make amends requires compassion, considering that many of those we harmed also harmed us. Yeah, I made an amends to somebody that really dogged me out, but it was me making that amends to them that counted. It may require a bit of empathy as well. We must set aside our anger toward these individuals, recognizing that we have made our own mistakes. We seek only to clean our own side of the street. If we haven't already, we should also start recognizing the value of the principles outside of the steps. We show love not only toward those we harmed, but all those we encounter. The best way to prevent ourselves from needing to make amends in the future is to do right by people the first time around. Okay? The Emily Post Institute demonstrates how we accomplish this in their principles of etiquette, primarily respect. Respect can be a feeling, and it can be demonstrated in our actions and words. To us, respecting other people means recognizing and acknowledging their worth and their value as human beings, regardless of their background, race, or creed. It's demonstrated in all our day-to-day relations. Refraining from demeaning others for their ideas and opinions, refusing to laugh at racist or sexist jokes, putting prejudices aside and staying open-minded. We show respect not just by what we refrain from doing, but also by intentional acts such as being on time, dressing appropriately, or giving our full attention to the person or people we're with. So remember, love and respect are more than feelings. They're things that we do, which is why step 8 only matters when we allow it and follow it with step 9. Step 9, that's the responsibility and justice step. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So step 9 is your discipline step. Training that corrects, molds, or perfects the mental faculties or moral character, to bring under control or train or develop by instruction. So step 9, made direct amends to such people that we had harmed. After we made that list, now we got to make direct amends to these people wherever possible. Responsibility and justice form the core principles of this step. You'll generally see one or the other listed, but we note them both here due to the important relationship between them. Justice does not mean comeuppance. It does not mean that we strike back at those who harm us. Instead, we seek balance in our lives by behaving responsibly. This means not only making amends, but also leaving well enough alone if we know that hearing from us will do a person more harm than good. Whether others accept our amends or not bears no relevance. What matters is that we made an earnest attempt to live by our principles and to demonstrate them in approaching people with whom we have not had the best history. Many include forgiveness on the list of principles for step 9 as well. However, we must achieve forgiveness in step 8 if we intend to follow through with step 9. We then demonstrate our forgiveness by responsible action and by keeping our mouths shut when necessary. At some point during our amends, people inevitably lash out at us. We may feel tempted to bite back, listing out their own less than favorable qualities. But this is not forgiveness, nor is it necessarily responsibility to tell someone else about their defects. Remember, your responsibility when working the principles is to yourself. Let others be responsible for their own actions. You couldn't force this type of honesty upon another person anyway, no matter how badly you may want to. So now we go to step 10. Step 10, discipline. Training that corrects, molds, or perfects the mental faculties or moral character to bring under control, to train, or to develop an instruction. So step 10, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We actually see discipline pop up on step 8 and step 9 quite a bit as well. On such lists, step 10 usually replaces discipline with perseverance. Call it what you want. The fact remains that step 10 necessitates a daily upkeep of the principles utilized thus far. The Big Book promises us that step 9 will bring about a better way of life. Step 10 asks that we continue to maintain it. To some, this may sound confusing. How can step 9 truly promise us a better way of life while asking us to work together, work towards that life every single day? Shouldn't a better way of life indicate an easier way of living? Well, I don't think so. Let's go back to that drop the rock. In early step 10 work, we often say, wait a minute. What I just said or did was wrong. I'm sorry. Let me make it right. As we mature in our step 10 work, however, we need to do this less and less often. We learn to observe ourselves, realize what we are doing, and stop it immediately before we've done much harm anyway. With practice and experience, we catch ourselves earlier and earlier. First after we act, then as soon as we act, later as we begin to act, and eventually before we act at the moment of impulse or emotion. You got that? First, let's repeat that. After we act, we start realizing. First, we start realizing after we act. Then we realize stuff as soon as we act. Then later, we realize stuff as we begin to act. Eventually, before we act, at the moment of impulse or emotion. Remember, Daniel's son didn't wax a car. Daniel's son didn't wax a car once and then become a karate master overnight. He worked hard at it, persevering through difficult training sessions and showing the discipline to keep going no matter how strenuous it seemed. In time, his lessons started to become easier. He grew into the Karate Kid over time. Likewise, rigorous practice of step 10 will help us to become more attuned to our principles. One day, we may wake up and realize just how far we've come. At this point, we can begin working toward an even greater level of spiritual awareness. Now, of course, I'm going to give you step 11 and 12 before we close this session. Step 12. Okay, we did say step 10 was discipline, patience. No, step 10 was patience and perseverance. Y'all know what I said. Let's go to step 11. Is that where we are? Yeah. Okay. We're on step 11. Awareness. To be alive and alert, vigilant and observing. The 11th step. In the 11th step, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Okay. Upon reaching step 11, we find ourselves able to embrace numerous spiritual principles. Great. Now, what do we actually do with that? Our principles benefit us and those we love, but we may still lack a fundamental sense of purpose. Don't feel ashamed if this describes you, as it describes most people who are human beings on any given day. In our search for purpose, we inevitably find ourselves looking toward the future. Through prayer and meditation, we learn to ground ourselves in the present. Instead of searching for some monumental goal in life, a noble endeavor, though often originating from something other than humility, we seek to determine how we can make ourselves useful in the present. Spiritual awareness means that we try to do the right thing at all times. This isn't about determining God's plan for life, the universe, and everything. We cannot know that, but we can remain spiritually aware in this moment, paying attention to the signposts that will lead us down the right path. And if we find ourselves off the path, as we most certainly will from time to time, we work again to establish spiritual awareness so that we may get back on the right track. Of course, sometimes we feel as if the path has been ripped away from us through no fault of our own. There's a great speech about this in the pilot episode of Friday Night Lights. Quote, "Give all of us gathered here tonight the strength to remember that life is so very fragile. We are all vulnerable, and we will all, at some point in our lives, fall. We will all fall. We must carry this in our heart, that what we have is special, that it can be taken from us, and when it is taken from us, we will be tested. We will be tested to our own very souls. We will now all be inside of ourselves. Life in recovery will not be perfect. That's whether you're in AA, OA, Overeaters Anonymous, you're in Gamblers Anonymous, you're in Narcotics Anonymous. Life in recovery will not be perfect. It will bring hardships, both old and new. But through awareness and understanding, we may continue seeking the right path. And in our worst moment, the last of the principles will help us to escape from the torment of our own minds. And the last principle, which is principle 12, it's service. Helpful act. Contribution to the welfare of others. Useful labor that does not produce a tangible commodity. So now let's talk about the 12th step and its principle of service. Those of us having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics, addicts, overeaters, etc., and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Okay, this is the last step. First of all, we should note that many do not hear step 12 correctly when reading aloud. They think of the spiritual awakening as a result, not the result. This one tiny word, however, makes a huge difference. It lets us know the answer to the question we posed in step 11. The purpose of developing our principles is, among other things, to share these principles with others. Okay? Did you get that? Service takes many forms. Returning to Emily Post's principles of etiquette, we like her, don't we? Let us take a look at the given definition of consideration. Consideration is about having empathy for another person. And the key to consideration is thoughtful behavior. Being thoughtful means thinking about what you can do for those around you and how your actions will affect them. Consideration leads us to help a friend or stranger in need, to bestow a token of appreciation, or to offer praise. Whether performing an act of charity or helping another person work the 12 steps, all principles meet in the middle when we perform acts of service. We maintain the honesty and humility to see that the world does not revolve around us. Maintaining awareness and discipline, we keep our eyes peeled for acts of service we may perform. Willing to perform these acts, we then approach those in need with courage and integrity, hoping to do what we can and maintaining faith, and we will make a difference. In this way, we touch others with our sense of responsibility and brotherhood. And should we misstep, doing more harm than good, we know that we can use these same principles to make it right. In our darkest hours, use these principles for the benefit of others. Using these principles for the benefit of others will help us escape from negativity. Service gives us a heads up and gets us out of our own heads and into the world. In active addiction, we were not a part of the world around us. You know, you have a lot of people who are actively drinking, alcoholically drinking, and they think they're a part of the world because they're having so much fun, but they are so totally disconnected. They're not connected. So service gets us out of our own heads and into the world. In active addiction, we're not part of the world around us. But through the principles of recovery, the goodness of the world moves through us and manifests in our actions. And with each act of kindness, we find ourselves feeling more and more blessed to finally feel involved in something. Here, we want people to experience the sense of wonderment and zest in their lives that accompanies true sobriety. Now, if you haven't been in a part of a program of recovery in AA, we call those people dry drunks. They may have stopped drinking. They can be some of the most miserable son of a guns on the face of this earth. You have people who are in spiritual programs who just go to church, and they're about as dry as a dry drunk because they're mean and evil and they're just right out nasty, you know. So if the whole world could participate and just go through the 12 steps and practice 12 steps with somebody and apply some of them to their life, especially the principles, we would have a better world to live in. And with that, wow, I want to say thank you. Thank you for hanging in there with me. We're like 15 minutes over our standard time. Sorry to have been away for such a long time. Sorry to give you all my computer woes, but be careful what you download on your computers and your tablets because you never know when you're going to infect it. And if you do your banking and your medical stuff and all that other happy stuff online, be careful what you're putting on. And like I said, I'm thankful that I have a computer technician in the family to be able to assist me with my child trials and tribulations, although I have to do a lot of the work. But, hey, that's what life's all about. We mess up, we screw up, then we got to fix up. And we can't expect everybody to just fix it for us. Sometimes we got to do it for ourselves. And with that, I want to say thank you for listening. Good to see all of you online. And we'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Stay blessed. Be good. Night, night. Thank you.